You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. I'm Mike Green. I want to start this segment with a quote. The world has proved to me that acceptance is very rare. West Virginia does not care about trans kids. They do not care about LGBTQIA plus people, and they do not care about people of color. They just don't care, and that sucks. End quote. These are the words of a teenager expressing their frustration with a society that surrounds them with a clear message that they hear and feel every day. That societal message, which says, I don't care about you, is interrupted by individual people who do care, who do demonstrate they care by gaining proximity and seeking to know what they could not possibly know without caring to ask, who are you? My first guest is one such individual who cared enough to ask and to spend a year gaining proximity to eight teenagers and hear their stories and experience their world alongside them for a while. Nico Lang is the award-winning author of the new book, American Teenager, How Trans Kids Are Surviving Hate and Finding Joy in a Turbulent Era. Welcome, Nico.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Also joining the exchange is the teenager from West Virginia who I quoted. Micah is featured in their own section of the book, American Teenager. Welcome to the exchange, Micah.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, Nico, let's start with a simple question. Why'd you write this book?
It really is the operative question, isn't it? The sort of genesis or like origin story of this book is that in 2021, sort of like relatively early in the pandemic, I got a call from a mom in Texas who was freaking out because the state had recently introduced a bill that would brand parents of trans kids as being child abusers if they allow their kids to transition. And that's not just like medically transition. That's not, you know, things like puberty blockers or hormone replacement therapy. That was also socially transitioning, which really just means that if you're a parent and you affirm your kids at all as being trans, if you allow them to express their gender in really any way, your child could be taken away from you and you could be thrown in jail. And for Kimberly, the mom, she was sort of like waking up in this new reality and trying to figure out what to do, like, you know, how to keep her family safe, how to keep her daughter safe. And they ended up having to flee Texas in order for her daughter to continue leading the life that she had been for years and years, to continue, you know, growing up like happy and healthy and to be able to live her dreams. And before that conversation, I think it always operated under this naive assumption that there was some good faith at the center of the conversation around trans kids, that, you know, even if there was somebody on the other side of this discussion who had questions or concerns, that at the end of the day, don't we all want what's best for these kids? They're kids. You know, we all want them to grow up well. And I realized then that that wasn't true, that there was so much bad faith here. Because if you're the kind of person who looks at parents of trans kids as inherently being child abusers, that's like operating under tremendously bad faith. So as a journalist, I thought it was so important to tell the stories of these families to show that they're just humans. There's people who are trying their best, messy like everybody else, but figuring out how to be people in the world. I mean, for these children, it's like they're not different from other kids. They are in some ways, but so many of their experiences are so profoundly average and normal and boring. And with this book, I just wanted to give these families the opportunity to show all of us who they really are, to speak about their experiences in their own words, to really defang some of that politically motivated hatred that's been targeted at them for so many years. And I was really glad to be able to do that, to give kids like Micah the microphone to just be able to tell us about who they are.
So, Nico, why do you think certain people, including children and teens, are marginalized and ostracized due to the choice of lifestyle and identities that don't conform to constructed societal norms?
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's sort of the question of the day, isn't it? But I think, you know, it gets down to fear and lack of knowledge, that we are scared of what we don't understand. We're scared about what's different from us. I think the LGBT movement did a really good job for a long time stressing the ways in which we're all the same. And because we're the same, we're entitled to rights. If you look at the marriage equality movement in the mid-2000s, you know, what marriage equality activists did really well is stressing that queer relationships are essentially the same as straight relationships, right? That we have the, you know, the same love, you know, love is love, and sort of all these slogans that you would see. And that's a really important message, right? That we are all the same. But I think, you know, what these kids taught me is that difference is okay too. have to fight to be the same in order to seem less scary to other people who might not understand us. Like, we should all fight for the ability to be ourselves, and we should be allowed to be ourselves. Like, I realized through writing this book that I feel like in my entire life, I haven't been fighting to be seen as the same as other people necessarily. I've just been fighting to be me. And that's what these kids are, too. They're just fighting to be able to be themselves. And I think there's something about that expression of difference, that we're the same in some ways, but different in others, that's deeply uncomfortable for a lot of people. And I think, you know, this is a time of real soul searching for those kinds of folks to ask themselves, like, why it's so bothersome for other people to make different choices than they would make for themselves. I mean, this is sort of the thing with abortion, right? That if you are anti-choice, what you are essentially saying is that abortion isn't right for me, and it's not right for anybody else either. You're making that decision for everybody. And it's the same with these kids, that you're, you know, these people are saying, oh, transitioning isn't right for me, and it's not right for anyone else either. But for these children and their families, they deserve the right to define their own lives, to define their paths, to be able to figure out who they are. It's their inalienable right as Americans to liberty and to freedom and to happiness. And I just think that we need to get better as Americans at affirming that we all have the ability to make those decisions. Like, to me, this book is the purest expression of liberty that I could possibly craft.
Well, that was passionately articulated. I want to bring Micah into this conversation, but let me remind everyone, my guests are Nico Lang, the award-winning author of the new book, American Teenager, How Trans Kids Are Surviving Hate and Finding Joy in a Turbulent Era, and Micah, a teen from West Virginia who has a featured section in the book. Micah, I want to start my question to you with a little bit of a lead-in. And Nico has given us all a unique gift. Every reader of American Teenager gets a glimpse into your life, Micah, your dreams, your aspirations, and even a glimpse into your journal, which starts each day with the question, what good are you going to do today? I wish every political leader asked themselves such a great question each day. I'm really glad to have this opportunity to hear from you, Micah. Help us understand your experience. What do you want us to know about you?
Well, first of all, thank you for the question. I think the one thing I would like people to know about me is I am just like every other kid. I mean, there's really nothing that's really crazy about my life or anything that's really, I don't know, sensationalized. I'm just a normal teenager who likes to go out with their friends. I like to have sleepovers. I just like doing what other kids like doing. And I guess the only thing that's different about me is that I'm gender fluid, and, you know, I don't live in a binary. I don't believe in male or female. I just believe in energy, and that's kind of the way I live my life, and that's really kind of the only thing that separates me apart from, you know, me being a Black person living in rural Appalachia. But I'm just like everybody else. You know, I have family. I have everything else that every other teenager has. And I think a lot of the times when people talk about trans people or people of color or anybody that's not normal, it's very rarely what people make it out to be. It's very rarely different than other kids.
Micah, you used the word normal. What does normal mean to you?
Well, I think to me, as somebody who I guess maybe isn't normal, I think whenever I think of the word normal, I think of somebody who is straight, I think of somebody who stays in the box, who isn't very, I don't know how to describe it. I think whenever I think of normal, I think of everything that I am not, and most people are. Most people are straight. Most people, you know.
Micah, let me interrupt. I don't want you to define what is normal for society. Tell me what is normal for you.
What's normal to me is waking up and seeing my friends. What's normal to me is cooking on a daily basis. What's normal to me is hanging out with the people I love a majority of the time. What's normal to me is being able to go out in public and, you know, walk around and, you know, not being worried that I'm being judged at or being afraid that something bad is going to happen to me, because most of the time I don't live my life that way. But, you know, as of recently, I have definitely been feeling like that.
So being normal is being free from fear, feeling accepted, feeling loved.
Yeah.
Feeling yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think sometimes I crave to be what society thinks is normal, but then I have to remember that life is often not that way. And oftentimes people go through a lot more hurt than they do the good things. And, you know, being a gender fluid Black person in West Virginia, my life has never been normal. But the parts of my life that are normal are the people that I have in my life, the people that keep me grounded. They're the people that I can rely on and that I can open up to, because at the end of the day, I think that's what everybody wants. And that's how everybody feels normal.
Do you believe that society can love and accept you for you being normal in your own eyes, in your own skin?
I do. You know, I've met all people from all different walks of life. I've met really conservative people. I've met really liberal people. I've met, you know, people who hate the very idea of me. And whenever they meet me, they can't. They don't hate me. They don't act like how we see these ultra-conservative personalities act to me. And I think most of the time it's because they don't know that we're just everyday people. I'm your neighbor. You know, when I'm a student, I'm a brother, I'm a sister to some. I'm just a normal person. And whenever people kind of, you know, talk to me and they get to know me, I think they get to see a bit of my personality and they get to see that I'm not how the media paints people like me to be. I'm not this over sensationalized version of myself. That's not me at all. I really am just a teenager who's trying to survive in America.
So there's really no reason for America to fear a normal teenager like Micah. We just got to get to know you.
Yeah, I think fear is the one thing that we all have in common. But the other thing we all have in common is love. I think kindness and reaching your hand out and helping people who aren't like you is so classically America. And I think we've gotten to the point to where we have lost that idea. And now, instead of talking about the things that ground us and bring us together, we're talking about the stuff that divides us and makes us afraid. And it doesn't help anybody if we're all afraid, because if you're afraid, then you can never get any work done. You can never get to the important stuff.
So well said. We need to take a short break. Yep. My guests are Nico Lang, the award-winning author of the new book, American Teenager, How Trans Kids Are Surviving Hate and Finding Joy in a Turbulent Era, and Micah, a teen from West Virginia who has a featured section in the book. I'm Mike Green. The JX will return shortly with my guests. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guests are Nico Lang, the award-winning author of the new book, American Teenager, How Trans Kids Are Surviving Hate and Finding Joy in a Turbulent Era, and Micah, a teen from West Virginia who has a featured section in the book. Nico, tell us about your process of writing this book. First, how did you choose the eight teens that you wrote about? And second, how did you gain their trust to let you share a chapter of their lives with the world?
Yeah, those are great questions. Some of these families I already knew because I've been doing this work for a really long time. So I'd interviewed their families before and, you know, sort of one project or another. So in South Dakota, for instance, Wyatt's mom, Susan, is one of the state's leading advocates for trans youth. And if you're doing a story on LGBT rights in South Dakota, she's pretty much the person that you call. So I'd known her for several years because she'd been a source for my story so many times. And then in Alabama, I met that family through a story I did for Rolling Stone. And I just loved interviewing them. They were just so warm and you could tell how much they loved each other. It just kind of like leapt through the phone. And I knew that that would just jump off the page in the same way. And I just knew that they would be these like wonderful subjects for a book like this. And with Micah, you know, it's kind of weird to talk about them while they're here, but I met them at a summer camp for queer and trans youth in West Virginia. And they just have this like larger than life, ebullient personality. Like Micah is one of these people that if you meet them one time, you'll never forget it in your entire life. And if this book is essentially a character study of all these kids, like I knew that Micah would be such a great character for a book like this. They're just somebody that you want to spend time with. And the other families, you know, I sort of found them through advocate channel. I reached out to LGBT groups in Florida and Texas because I felt like you couldn't really understand what it feels like to be a trans youth in those, or you couldn't really understand what it means to be a trans youth in America right now without understanding what it feels like to be a trans kid in those states. Just because they've gone through so much, there have been so many anti-trans bills. And I felt like depicting those experiences was just so critical to a project like this. And I was so glad to be able to tell those stories. And then in the case of the other two families, I reached out to AAPI groups. That stands for Asian American Pacific Islander, because I felt like I hadn't seen enough representation in the queer space of those stories. And I really wanted to see them. And I'm not AAPI. So I knew that if I had a hunger for it, then there are people out there who really needed to see those stories represented. And I was so glad to be able to do that. And I was particularly glad to be able to tell a Muslim story in this book, because I think that there are so many stereotypes about Muslims and what they think about queer people, just this like really painting with a broad brush. And I was glad to be able to show that that's not necessarily true, that, you know, there are all kinds of families, there are all kinds of Muslim families, and there are all kinds of ways to love your kid. And then in terms of building trust, that was a really difficult thing, because I essentially had to make 7 documentaries in a very short amount of time. I only had 2.5 weeks with these families. So as much as I was thinking about representation and wanting to bring in as many kinds of voices in a book like this as possible, I really just needed families that I connected with right away, that it felt like we really understood each other and got each other, that we were able to sort of see each other as human pretty much from the first conversation. Like so many of these families, we were just like cracking jokes right away and just being like really friendly with each other in a very like sort of like not professional way. And I love that, because I knew, I was like, if we had that kind of camaraderie, that kind of connection up front, then we could be able to go to this really deep place in a short amount of time, because we were essentially doing deep therapy work every single day. You know, we're sitting 1.5 hours with each other, sharing, you know, some of the worst things that have ever happened in these folks' lives. So like some of that trust had to be built in right away, or we just wouldn't be able to go there. And I thought that connection was also really important, because for a book like this, I think you needed to feel that I was really connected to the subjects so you could be connected to the subjects. Like I wanted a book like this to be an empathy machine, to where when you read it, you come to like not only empathize with these families, but really grow to love them and to see them like they're your own family, like your own friends. So that way, if you, you know, need this kind of lesson, you can be reminded that these folks deserve the same rights and protections as you do. And I'm really glad that these families were able to trust me with their lives and their stories. Like, I feel really, really grateful to that, because they gave away so much to all of us. I mean, you called it before, this book is a gift, and it's a gift that these families gave to us. And I'm just in their debt forever.
Well, Nico, you did the work of gaining access, of gaining proximity, of gaining trust, of learning who these people are as people. You did the work that so many of us who have strong opinions have not done. And you went and you met Micah face to face. And Micah, your section in the book opens with a description of the scene in the state legislature of West Virginia. You went there to speak, but was unable to due to time constraints on the proceedings. What did you want to say to these political leaders?
Well, first of all, I remember that day so vividly. It was definitely an emotional day. One of the things that I remember specifically from that day and going to the state legislature was the amount of people who are supposed to be public servants, who are supposed to hear the constituents that were not there, who did not care what people had to say, who did not want to listen because they already had their mind made up. You know, that was definitely really hard, and it was a tough pill to swallow. I think for me, it's just, I wish people would know who we are, because again, I mean, I think a lot of the times in LGBTQ media or trans media, our lives are often exaggerated with this oversized brush. And that is not how life is. You know, it's very rarely like that. And I think it was, for me at least, I think it was important that the people that we elect to work for the people should see the people that they work for. And that's really why I wanted to speak. I wanted people to see me. Not what the media tells them is me, but me. I want to tell my story. I want to tell you how this is going to affect me. This is important to me because, you know, I don't need other people to tell my story for me. Now, I know that's ironic because I'm in Nico's book and, you know, Nico told my story. But that's how I felt that day. And that's what I really wanted to say.
Well, let me remind everyone of who I'm talking to. My guests are Nico Lang, the award-winning author of the new book, American Teenager, How Trans Kids Are Surviving Hate and Finding Joy in a Turbulent Era, and Micah, a teen from West Virginia who has a featured section in the book. Nico, Micah was just talking about people getting to know his story. We don't know your story. Tell us your personal story.
Oh, gosh. sorry, I'm like, oh, God, how deep do we want to get here? You know, I've been trying to, I think, avoid talking about my story a little bit in writing a book like this, just because I've always wanted to keep the spotlight on these kids. But, you know, since I'm here and we're asking, you know, I had an interesting childhood. I, you know, grew up being unsure of my gender from a young age. You know, I thought from, oh God, until I was about like 5 or 6 years old, like I, you know, this is a loaded phrase, but I thought that I wanted to be a girl. I had sort of identified as a girl. And it was just sort of like how I lived my life. And I think it was because I didn't have the right language to describe how I actually felt, which is as somebody who doesn't identify within the binary. I think I just knew from a really early age that I wasn't a boy, that, you know, the doctor had sort of got it wrong, and I didn't identify with what was put on my birth certificate. And it just took me a really long time to find the language to be able to describe myself and the way I experienced the world. And even when I did find that language, I think I sort of had imposter syndrome about it for a long time, that I would sort of like talk myself out of it as being like, oh, you're not non-binary enough, or, you know, you're not the right kind of non-binary. And I think even still I'm quite hard on myself, that I am weird about taking up space as a non-binary person. I don't talk about it very often, just because, I don't know, I think there are ways in which I'm still working this out for myself. But I loved with this book getting to talk to these kids who are so sure about themselves, who have access to language and terminology, who get this like really tremendous head start that I just didn't. You know, in a way, I feel like I'm still kind of like catching up to these kids who from a really, really, really young age have been empowered with this radical self-knowledge. That throughout the book, you see how many things are up in the air for these kids. There's this messiness, you know, you don't really know what your future looks like or what the future holds or what you're going to be, what you're going to do with your life. But it seems like the thing that they're so sure about is their gender. It's like kind of like the light in the darkness. And I'm just so proud that I was able to depict that for these kids, and also for people like me who I think need to see that. It's so tremendously and profoundly hopeful to see that there are these kids out there in the world who are so sure and who have like this level of knowing themselves that I just didn't have. So I'm just so happy for this generation of kids. Like, I know that they're experiencing such extraordinary challenges. But in writing this book and presenting these stories, I can't help that they think that they're going to be okay through all of it somehow, that they're going to find their way just as they have already.
Well, Nico, you carefully crafted these stories of young people in a way that is extraordinarily illuminating, heartwarming, and heartbreaking as well. I really believe it's a gift to gain such proximity to the lives of these people who your readers may never meet. And the lives of teens like Micah could influence many of us to ask this question, how should we treat each other? And of course, Micah's question, what good can I do today? So is there any chance that you and your featured stars in this book might consider a traveling town hall tour to connect these young people directly across the country with everyone?
Yeah, I'm trying the best I can. You know, it's really tough with, you know, my publisher's been tremendously supportive of this book. You know, it's how this conversation happened after all. But, you know, they don't have a lot of money. So I've had to really rely on community groups to help bring me to different locations across the country. And that's been, you know, I've been extraordinarily lucky. I've gotten to go to so many places around the country and talk about this book to communities that I think really need to hear this message. Like I just got back from a trip to Washington, D.C., to Little Rock, to Florida, to all of these places in, you know, very varied locations. But the work isn't done yet. Like I need to be able to go as many places as I can to be able to carry these stories with me, to be able to speak for these kids, because, you know, these kids really need allies, right? They've been fighting for themselves for such a long time that they need other people to stand up for them, to do some of that work when they have to, like, go be a young person. Micah has to graduate college, which I'm always bugging them about, right, about their, like, studies. But they have to, like, go do that, to go, like, build a life, to, you know, work toward their future. They don't always have the time to do this. And when they take the time to do this, it means that they're taking time out from all those other things that they should be doing. So I hope that there are people like me out there who are able to carry their stories forward, and also that there are allies who hear this conversation and are inspired by it, who ask themselves, what good can they do? And the good that they can do is to fight for these kids, to use their own voices and their platforms, because these kids need help. Like, they need all of the, like, allies that they can get right now. We look at the challenges that we're going to be facing under the Trump administration, and these kids can't fight back against that alone. Like, they need help, and we have to help them.
Speaking of that, Micah, I've got 90 seconds left, so I'm going to give you the last word. I'm interested in what you envision for our society if you had a magic wand and could transform it, and how can we help?
Well, I love that question, and I want to start off by saying part of the reason why I did this book was because growing up, I had nobody that looked like me, that sounded like me, nobody that I identified with that I saw. And I feel like if I had this book and I had somebody's story that was similar to mine, it would have saved me so much heartache. And so when I think about society and the future, I hope for more stuff like this. I hope for, you know, even younger people than myself to be inspired to, you know, hopefully have that sense of community, which is something that I never, you know, felt. I was such a lonely child because I wasn't sure of myself. And I didn't become sure of myself until I was in middle school and high school. And I hope that in the future, we can avoid having these conversations about what we need to do with other people's bodies and how other people should act. And I hope that we can all just realize that we are all so similar without even knowing it, and that we all are connected, and that just because there's one thing that makes us different does not mean that there's nothing that makes us the same. Because that is just so far removed from the truth.
And I hope that our listeners heard you loud and clear. Thank you both, Nico and Micah.
Thank you. Thank you.
My guests were Nico Lang, the award-winning author of the new book, American Teenager, How Trans Kids Are Surviving Hate and Finding Joy in a Turbulent Era, and Micah, a teen from West Virginia who has a featured section in the book. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR.